Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to have a series here talking about the recent elk trip that Ted and I were on with Cody and Wes from Born and Raised and Zach Sandow from OnX. We recorded several podcasts throughout, kind of just talking about the process of Ted and I's first elk hunt, kind of what our expectations were, some of our questions, some of the things that are similar between deer and turkey hunting, and the podcasts from this series we recorded out in the field. So it was August 31st. We had just got to the trailhead. We recorded the podcast as we were about to go in the following morning for our first day of hunting. So hopefully you enjoy listening to the evolution of what we expected, kind of some of the things that happened throughout the hunting trip, and kind of our final conclusions as well. Had a great time with these guys, and I think you guys are going to enjoy this series of podcasts just to listen to our excitement throughout the trip. And there's going to be more elk hunting to come. I'm actually right now working my butt off to try to get all these podcasts posted before we go back out here in a couple days. My buddy Ben, who you may have seen on some of the videos in the past from Ohio, he's coming all the way out here to Colorado. We're going back in here in a couple of days, and we'll be continuing to record podcasts throughout. And I think it'll be cool too to get his perspective as well. We'll do some podcasts with him while we're out in the field, just trying to keep you guys informed on kind of our mentality as Eastern hunters and hopefully answering some of the questions that you may have. Really enjoyed my first trip hunting elk, and I'm looking forward to getting back out in the woods here in a couple days. But before we get into the podcast, just want to remind you guys that you can check out the description of this podcast, our YouTube videos, and look on our website, and you can see all of our promo codes there that can save you some money as you're buying new gear. Just going to run through those quick. If you guys have any interest in calls, we can save you 10% on Woodhaven calls if you use the promo code THP2018. If you want to save 20% on the OnX Hunt app, you can use the code THP. If you need any new trail cameras, we can save you 10% off of Exodus trail cameras with the code THP10. And finally, if you need any bow accessories, we can save you 20% off of Trophy Ridge products with the code THP20. And also, we've got our North Dakota hunts going up on YouTube now, so make sure you go over there and check those out. I'm excited to catch up on the videos when I get a chance here. I've been up in the mountains with zero service for 10 days, and I don't have a lot of time, so I'm gonna have to watch them. Hopefully you guys check them out too. Hopefully you like them. Give us some feedback on the podcast and on the videos. We really appreciate the support. And with that said, I will shut up now and we'll jump into talking about elk hunting.
Surrounded with a great group of guys here. Got Zach and Ted from the Hunting Public. I have Zach from OnX and the one and only, since Trent's not here, I'm gonna say Weston, or Wesley, as I like to call him, his real name. We're here on an inaugural elk hunt for Zach and Ted. Mm-hmm. And then Zach Sando and I from OnX have shared elk camp before, so it's good to be reunited. And I'm just excited. Like, for me, don't have a tag. Literally here just to help out, do whatever I can do to make you guys successful. We got two tags in camp, Zach and Zach. We kill a couple bulls, maybe Ted and Wes are up. Is that the plan?
Yeah.
For sure. we're here, and I'm just really excited about kind of sharing my knowledge of mistakes.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to have a lot of questions for you guys that probably a lot of people ask. Something that I feel like with whitetail hunting experience, that's hunting experience, but it's not elk hunting experience. It's a different terrain. It's a different habitat type. I mean, there's just a lot of questions that I know we're going to have.
Yeah, I got a lot of ideas and stuff, and like we've talked about a lot of ideas that we have, so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. I want
to
hear them.
What's different.
And yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Stuff like that.
So first off, Zach, introduce yourself.
So Zach, the Hunting Public. I have hunted deer and turkey since I was like, I can't even remember my first deer and turkey hunts. And hunted public land since I was 12 years old for deer and turkey. And that's just really what I know. you know, I think some things of that experience are going to play into this, like getting away from other hunters. Some of that stuff is going to like transition over, but I don't know exactly how.
I think it's just at a broader scale, kind of, you know, bigger scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, from my perspective, it's you guys honestly are very similar. You hunt very similar. You both public land, different areas, and you kind of learn as you go and just go to a brand new area and then just see what the critters are doing.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited, kind of from the outside looking in on the two styles of hunting, seeing the similarities, but then also seeing like how you guys learn and when you start hearing the elk. And it's, I really think you're going to find that it's a lot similar, just your styles. Obviously we're hunting a different critter here, but it's going to be pretty cool because it's really, you two are the same thing. It's just one's hunting elk and one hunts whitetail.
Yeah. Well, and I think one thing that like Ted and I both like is that super aggressive, like on the fly style. Like we talk about, definitely him and I often, like just learning it as you go into it blind, whatever it may be, just like be ready to adjust. And I think just from like listening to you guys talk in your videos, watching you do it, I feel like I already have an expectation of like how it's going to go. And I feel like I'm that works for me, you know what I mean? That like, and I know I would say, not to speak for you, bud, but I feel like you feel the same way, right, Ted?
Yeah, definitely.
I think for our listeners, if you haven't heard of The Hunting Public, you need to check them out. And
yeah, sorry, I didn't do a good job of saying, I kind of just got to like figure out elk again.
It's all good. Potatoes sometimes.
I want everyone that's listening to this to understand who The Hunting Public is. If you follow us because of the way we hunt elk and things, it's a little bit different. It's a lot in your face. We're either going to run elk out of the country or we're going to kill them. And I'm not saying that the Hunting Public guys run deer out of the country or they're going to kill them.
No, we do.
Okay. Well,
that is what we do. For you. Yeah. No, like I take a lot of pride in that, actually. Like,
perfect.
I'm either going to spook them or I'm going to make them go.
Perfect.
And like that's what I want to happen.
Perfect. So
I don't want to sit back.
Yeah.
So I think where we're going to have some fun is seeing the correlation of how they hunt whitetails. This is coming from a blacktail hunter who has an avid dislike for the outdoor channel and hunting whitetails because my deer experience is absolutely totally different than what I see on TV. And I think the reason that I didn't like what I saw on outdoor television is because everything seems so perfect and just manicured, right?
Yeah.
And so, but when I watched your guys's, when I first started watching your guys' stuff, you guys were doing stuff that I actually grew up doing in the blacktail woods with scent bumping and deer drives.
Yeah.
You never see that on the outdoor channel.
No.
Right? And so to me, the way that these guys analyze deer and hunt deer is totally different than what most people have seen. And I think that their knowledge and how they do that is going to correlate into elk hunting. Because the way I see it is I think you guys are very analytical in some things. And I think you guys will have a lot of good questions as far as...
That's what I'm excited about, honestly, is just to have you guys fire off. Like,
one thing, too, on the flip side of what you just said is, like, to me, for quite a while and truly up until, like, probably the last year, because of watching the Outdoor Channel, I didn't know you could hunt elk every year like this, like you guys do.
Oh.
Because when you watch the Outdoor Channel, it's like, oh, buddy drew his tag after 13 years of points, and he shoots some freak, and then he doesn't hunt elk for 10 more years. What? I don't want to do that. And, like... So that's what I associated with. So it's kind of the same thing where I'm like, well, it's not the same sport at all. And that's funny because I feel like a lot of us East, you know, on the flip side of that. So if you're listening on, you know, and you know The Hunting Public and don't know Born and Raised, like these guys hunt elk every year and they do it aggressively. And they like, I think the difference for me is it's not just like, you know, hunt a little bit in the morning and then in the evening when it's good. It's like this, it feels manicured. Somebody's like, you know, driving you out there on the buggy and your bugle from the buggy or whatever. It's like these guys like really work hard, and once they're on something, they're aggressive, and it's really fun to watch. So on the flip side of things, I think the perspective from an Eastern hunter about what Western hunting is like is can be very similar, because I think for a lot of, I mean, would you say you have a similar opinion?
Yeah, another thing like I've heard a lot is like, oh, Colorado over the counter, man, that's super tough. Like, I think I've heard that quite a bit.
Oh, people are like, well, you're, why are you going there? Like, that's gonna suck. And like, you guys have this different, like, you just have an attitude where you're like, we're going to go in, and regardless of what happens, like, we're going to try hard for them.
Yeah, 100%.
We're not just going to just give up. And I think that's...
It only takes one. It's like that.
Yeah. And it's so similar to how we feel with deer. Like, man, it's going to be tough. And there's going to be days where, like, I mean, you're crawling, you're freezing, you're crawling on a buck, you're trying to get to your tree stand without making too much noise, whatever. It's brutal. It sometimes is tough. But what I know is going to be similar amongst both of these groups is the fact that, like, no matter how tough it is or how, like how many hours or days of unsuccess there are, we're never going to give up. And that's, I think that's what I'm so attracted to, like, your guys' content and why I'm so stoked to go hunting with you guys. It's like, we're going to do it.
Positive attitude, positive results. I mean, and it is hard. I mean, like you said, but it's also like embracing the suck of it, like, and enjoying the fact, like, when we kill a bull, which we will do this week, you guys are going to fill a tag and you're going to go, it's 7.5 miles to the truck. And that's not on the trail. That's as the crow flies. And you're going to like, how is this going to happen? It's like 1 foot in front of the other. It's no different than how you killed it.
Yep.
Like, yeah. It's just all part of the journey, and you take it all in and like soak it up as you come off the mountain back to the truck. So,
well, and it's one of those things too where it's like, even if we don't hear or see anything for the first 5 days, and then all of a sudden one comes in and you shoot a bull, you're going to look at it fondly. You're not going to remember all the shitty times, tripping over downfall, all that. Like, you will honestly look back and you'll be like, that was the greatest hunt ever.
Yeah.
You forget about all, you know, sweating, out of food, out of water, all that stuff, because it's just like, it's like that type 2 fun. And then after you look at it and you're like, man, that was so great, which is cool, because it really, honestly, like, we're talking about how rough it can be, and it can, you know, especially midday, you're getting down or whatever, and then all of a sudden you hear one bugle and it's like your spirits change and you forget about everything that just happened.
Mm-hmm. And it happens. It, when it goes right, it seems so easy. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, like, how do you not kill one every time you step out of the truck?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
things. It's kind of like, and at the same time, we keep referring to whitetail, but like, also it's like turkeys like that, you know, we're really hardcore turkey hunters too. And I guess the embracing the suck, or like remembering, you know, getting through that tough time to get to the success or whatever, like, that's so similar. I can't stress that enough to like how I feel about whitetail hunting at this point. It's like, man, like, I remember one time last year, Logan, who we hunted with, he shot a buck with a gun. And he didn't put a perfect shot on it. We saw it bed down, so we had to stalk and get a different shot on it. We're walking through like half frozen water up to our knees with ankle boots on, and it's like, you know, below 20 degrees, and we got another shot on him and got him, and it sucked. But like, you know,
What is he gonna do?
Yeah, you have to do it. And then at the end of it, we have a buck, you know, and it's like worth it. But so, like, you know, it's just like, that's just one example of.
Yeah,
infinite. Like, it's not always like super easy, but it's worth it. And I think, I don't know, it just like watching you guys, that hits home to me first, I would say.
Yeah, and I think that mobile aggressive tactic you guys do in the whitetail woods is almost identical. Like, we roll in. I'm excited. It's a brand new area, brand new unit. Never been here before. Scoured Onyx. Like, okay, We're here, and there's tons of people, but there's not many hunters. Like,
well, so
paint the picture for where we're at. We actually haven't done a good job at that. I would say we are within a Joe Montana football throw of a target.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And,
well, yeah. So I have been here, like, just but briefly, right? I basically got here and checked some access points and walked up some trails, and I've got off the trail some, but not like by no means anything crazy, just trying to see some basic sign, right? Just because I'm learning about elk. And I think one of the first questions that I had, and one of the interesting things to me, is like, you've got these areas to hunt. We're in Colorado. You can hunt a ton of units. You can buy an over-the-counter tag, and you can hunt all those units for archery. So how do you pick just one? And I guess one of the first things that I saw when I looked at this place, I was like, man, roads, like big roads going past. For whitetail, I wouldn't go on an out-of-state trip next to such a big road. But like,
I don't know how big, that. Do you mean like highway?
I mean like.
Or what do you mean?
I mean like highway, like. Okay. Like, if I was hunting by the same highway in Ohio, I wouldn't hunt next to this highway in Ohio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't. Just, I would go like way away from it. So like, to me, when I'm looking at a unit, like, does that have any factor or what? And go ahead.
So it's an interesting question, because what I've learned, I try to somewhat now pick the obscure, overlooked areas, because it's like, I wouldn't hunt there because there is a highway. It's close to some towns. It's like, it's almost like trying to reverse engineer everything.
Yeah.
People come up here and they see 60 cars on this road and they're like, oh, I'm out. There's too many people.
There was not a parking spot.
Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of one of those, it's a roll of the dice. You never know until you go, but we'll adapt accordingly. Mm-hmm. Whether we change locations or, okay, here's the fringe, like the nucleus. I mean, I try to somewhat avoid trailheads as much as possible anymore, just because that's like an easy jump off point, trails, access. Like if we can go cross country, look at the harder access. But there's enough here that, okay, we'll use that as just the first little launch, and then as soon as we can get off trail, cross country, go cross country. Mm-hmm. Picking a unit is, I think some of the data is a good guidance, but it also probably like deters people, like, oh, I won't hunt that because the success rate's only 10%. Well, it's a high volume of hunters. You look at it, it's a lot of non-resident hunters that may not have as much experience. So you kind of sort through that data and be like, okay, well, how many people are actually hunting hard? What's the days hunted in that unit? Bull to cow ratios is the biggest thing for us. We like to hunt an area with lots of bulls. Mm-hmm. It's a
one thing that then did stick out to me. Like I was worried that I was like, roads. And like that immediately from my whitetail and turkey public experience, I'm just like, that's tough, right? That's going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of people. But once I got here, then I got to thinking about something else that we haven't talked about yet. And I do want to ask you guys about this. When I saw the beetle kill in this area, the downed trees, and just the dense timber where a guy can't just crack one from a couple hundred yards away with a rifle, I was like, maybe this is something here. And that stuck out to me. It was, because I think the same way about deer. Areas where it's easy to hunt whitetail with a rifle are tough to hunt with a bow.
Yep.
Like Nebraska sandhills are tough to hunt with a bow because they get shot at with a rifle. There's not a lot of big bucks there. But you flip to like, you know, a more dense timber area, like it gets a little bit easier. You're into more deer, higher deer densities. I got to looking at this and I was like, you know, man, like nobody can rifle hunt in here real effectively. Not like, I mean, you're basically hunting them with a bow still with a rifle in here. Is that something that you're picking out?
Nailed it. Okay. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's literally like, you know, and seeing it on the map and then talking to you. But until we actually got here tonight is when I just got jacked, because it was like, this is exactly what we'd hoped for terrain. Two factors there. Rifle harvest is challenging. Age class of bulls generally are better.
Right.
So, I'm not going to hunt for the biggest one, but chances are it might be a nice one that comes in, which is a cool deal, you know? Yeah. I mean, you always want
exactly
to try to kill
them. That's exactly what we talked about, which is cool. And because that does correlate to whitetail. So I think if you're a whitetail public land guy and you're thinking about making an elk, you know, look at some of the similar things. That's a very similar thing, like looking for rifle
Yeah, and something to touch on to you, like when you're asking, like, how do you find a unit? It also comes down to what kind of hunter are you?
Right.
Because there's all sorts of units in Colorado, Idaho that are 100% roadless, but super hard to go access all that. And there's other units that, like in Oregon, that have closed roads that you can bike on or walk on or even drive on. And it's not uncommon. I mean, my dad last year called a herd of 50 across a road in front of a diesel, and they ended up shooting a bull right in front of the diesel, practically on the road. Yeah. But it's all like, what are you looking for out of a hunt? Do you want to be in the high country? Do you want to be super mobile and night bugle? Do you want to sit a wallow? Like, what do you want, and how? I think that's one of the things that people don't think about when they're looking at a unit.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
That's kind of how I think of it.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to end up probably wanting to hunt a lot like you guys. So this, I mean, when you asked if it had a lot of blowdowns, we were talking on the phone, I was like, yeah. And I was like, I think I knew that was something that you were going to like, you know, because it just makes it hard. It makes it hard. And then that plays into another similarity of you want to find a place that nobody else wants to go. And like, that's all we do with whitetail. Like, that's, I would say we think about that before we even think about like what type of habitat it is. It's like, where does somebody not want to go? Whether it's right by the road or it's way the heck back there.
Right.
I think that's a similarity.
We've found, you can't be afraid. I mean, we've killed bulls literally like highway noise, just bulls screaming his head off. Just happens every day. Same deal. It's like the overlook stuff. Mm-hmm. Access. Yeah.
So I guess I have another. I'm going to just keep.
Dude, keep your fire with
that. Yeah. All right. So with whitetail, for me, when I go in, I'm looking for hot sign or looking for a lot of deer or a big buck, right? And I mean, we could go down a rat hole of what hot sign is, but we've done plenty of podcasts on that lately. But like, when you're going into elk hunt, and I guess what I was getting at is like, I feel like we do a pretty good job. Not saying we're always perfect, but like, okay, we need to stay here or we need to get out. We need like either or we'll come back here later in the season when maybe some factors have changed. At what point is it like, hey, we're not seeing enough sign? And what is that sign generally going to look like when you're elk hunting? Like, if you go in and you're not feeling it, what does it look like when you're not feeling it versus when you are feeling it?
Yeah, I mean, the coolest thing about elk in September is a bugle. Mm-hmm. Like that, we hunt with the bugle. That's our binoculars. That's our, we cover ground with our boots, bugle a lot. So the sign side of it is looking for fresh rubs and tracks, mm-hmm. rubs, scat, obviously, you know. And if it's low density in that, it's like, okay, if the hunting pressure is low, I can be okay with that, knowing like when we find one, he'll play ball. Mm-hmm. If we'll play around with that. And we've done that where it's like we heard one bull that day and we killed it, but it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was the only elk we got on, but he came in good and, you know, called really well. If it's a lot of density, but there's people around, it doesn't deter me too much. Just depends at what the winds are doing. If it's consistent winds, then we feel good about killing them. If it's inconsistent winds, then it's like, all right, let's move. And the one thing about Colorado that you will learn with these big mountains, especially hunting on a range like this, it is, the thermals are about as predictable as, I mean,
that's good.
No. I'm sorry. Unpredictable. Yes. There's the general down in the morning, up in the afternoon, but it'll be
different on ridges.
Oh yeah.
So the biggest thing like to pay attention to is draws, sun, like where the sun's at, where the shade's at, knowing that you can get away with, okay, if we keep on this, even though the bull's up there on the face and it's blowing up the face, we can stay down here in the creek and it'll be blowing down and call him off that face. Even though, like, the wind, if you went 20 yards, the wind would be at your back. So just playing that thermal game. But it is the first year, I remember Ty and Steve, when we came to Colorado, had a day they got on 14 bulls in dang near inside bow range, and every single one got winded. And they're like, it was the most frustrating day of elk hunting. I'm like, dude, it was the most epic day. You had 14 bugling bulls inside 80 yards. Like, how can you complain? And it's like, it was tough because Mother Nature's gave them the finger, you know, mm-hmm. multiple times. Yeah. So, yeah.
See, that's, it's interesting. And I mean, unfortunately, I think there's a lot of people that, like, can't figure out the wind in whitetail woods, let alone when you get up in the mountains. So it's something that, but in the, in like, in my eyes, I a lot of times, one thing that you said that I think gets overlooked, at least in whitetail hunters and maybe elk hunters too, the sun. The sun, in my opinion, when it heats something up, it makes it go up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's that's consistent. Like 100%. When I hunt, what's that face?
Yes.
For? Okay.
Yeah, yes, 100%.
Okay. Because like when, a lot of times I'll sit on a, like if I was going to sit a tree stand in a ridge and I knew that sun's going to come up and hit that hillside, I'm going to play a, like a rising, more of a rising scent. And I think that sun factor, like it's just everybody wants to look at a forecast and just say, well, the wind's blowing out of the northwest and they want it to be exactly that way. And like, I mean, that's just not the case. Like the wind just isn't going to do, it's going to follow terrain. It's going to follow water, cool areas, like like difference in temperature of like
just the terrain.
It's gonna make a huge difference.
Topography, and, totally.
Like and I don't even look at the weather forecast with wind direction here.
I mean, really,
and we also will cover ground where you'll be like, dude, the wind's right at our back. It's like, it's okay, because if the elk are off left, right, we still have a play. Like we have to get this way to cover ground. And then once we locate them, that's when we start playing that wind as much as possible.
Typically they're not gonna smell you before we locate them, because we, our style is bugle, right? And like you said about when is a time for us to move or not, it could possibly be that we are in a lot of sign but we haven't heard a bugle after 3 days.
So then you get,
I mean, at that point,
not worth it.
At that point it's just there's a bunch of elk there, but we're looking for the one that wants to bugle and play the way we play. So that's
kind of turkeys in areas where you can find scratching on every ridge and never hear a gobble for days and days, and it's like at that point move on, because it's not worth the hunting the bird that's not gobbling, right?
It's the same thing.
So Sandow, we hunted together 2 years ago, actually like late in archery season, because it was like the 10th of
October 10th
or something. What was your take on like our style coming into that situation?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, those elk aren't talking much there. And so we were just getting, and you know, it's interesting because we're talking about different topography and stuff like that. I mean, we could see fields down in the bottom where we were hunting private land. And so we're trying to catch these big herds coming up into the public. But we remember we saw that one bull and they wouldn't talk. We could see him at like 400 yards. And, you know, they weren't going to play, and so we moved on, and we found a couple that wanted to play.
I think that's so cool.
And it just took some time. I mean, even, you know, we're talking about obscure areas. That last bull the last morning, I could hear the cars going, and we had a quarter mile of public down to the main road, and there just happened to be a bull that sounded
literally
off once.
Bedded on the knob.
And so we just got in tight, and I think you had to call to him.
It took a
four or five times
it's like
before
that
he
dance
started playing.
Getting his excitement up, and then finally, like, it was, he was raking, scream fest, and.
But it was the perfect example of, you know, we knew there was elk there. We would see them, hear them in the bottoms, but they weren't talking. But then finally we found a couple bulls that wanted to play, and we got close. And honestly, like, they do talk in October, and they're still rutting, but it's late.
Mm-hmm.
It was really late, but biggest things were just covering country and trying to find the ones that would play with us and respond back, and ended up getting a couple chances there.
I'm really anxious here just because season dates. Normally, this season's open a week earlier. Usually, right now, on Labor Day weekend, it's a week of season. And we, the earliest I've ever been here, September 1st. Mm-hmm. So we're right in the same time frame, but it's also been treaded on for 9 days usually, you know. So I'm anxious. And we've had, I've showed up too on the 10th of September in Colorado, and it's like, mega scream fest, and then by the 12th or 13th it's like slows down. So I'm anxious. I think as this week goes on, I think it'll build.
Well, I feel like this is, entered a different question that I have, right?
Yeah.
And two questions. The first question is like timing. So you answered some of it, like early, I think, like this, they're starting to ramp up, correct? Like they're starting to actually like do the bugling like more frequently,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Now I'm gonna hunt with you guys for 10 days. I'm gonna take a couple days break, and then my buddies are coming out and we're gonna hunt for another whatever 7 days. So we'll be hunting from like the 14th till for like another week at least. So like, how is it going to change? How are they going to change from where they are? The bugling, like, are they going to change elevation significantly? Not much. And is the bugling going to be much different, or is it just variable?
Totally. I pretty unpredictable, honestly. Depends on pressure. You know, mm-hmm. the big part of like where they're at going to be on the mountain. Mm-hmm. Like you may see some of these like push right down on some private low. They may be still at timberline at that time. The biggest thing is wherever those cows are want to be, mm-hmm. like is where those bulls are going to be around. I like early because the chance of getting a bull that isn't so much locked on cows, like they're pretty aggressive searching. So they're cruising ground. They're kind of doing the same thing as we are. It's like when we crest a ridge, we'll crack off a bugle. If you watch bulls and I've watched them in some open country, like as soon as they come out of a basin, they get to the ridge top, they sound check the basin, bugle a couple times, and then based on that they make their decision, like if they're going to move down here, like so we're basically emulating that cruising bull that's like mm-hmm. in search. They definitely can get more defensive and aggressive in the fighting mode. Now we might, it may be like a combination of like they just are coming in to check out what's going on, like, oh cool, I haven't been around some more out, like let's go check out what's
early
going on.
Or later
early okay. Yeah, where yeah. later is going to be more in that emotion, aggressive. With that said, 1st of September I've had them like drooling, coming in screaming their face off, like ready for a fight. So
one sorry,
yeah, go ahead.
One thing you could probably expect is bulls to have more cows with
sure
them.
And yep. that's something I think that you maybe told me like briefly on the phone. So like my question with that then is, it like, does that make it like significantly harder? I mean, we had talked too, it's like Tom with hens, right? Tom, seeing it's flipped with turkeys, like later in the season, you get toms that are kind of broke up and they're willing to move a little bit more. They're henned up early, break away late. Sounds like with bulls, they're cruising more and then they kind of get locked down with the cows. Is it going to be, I don't know, I guess what are the similarities and in differences, or are there not, just like it's just so variable
talk about the midday madness and getting in.
Yeah, the biggest thing like Wes kind of touched on for us is, you know, when you said how you'd seen elk hunting on television, uh-huh. hunt in the morning, cruise back to the cabin, the wall tent, whatever, have a big midday breakfast, lunch, nap,
right.
head back out at 6 o'clock. And for me, I would literally rather miss the daylight hunt and mm-hmm. hunt from 8 o'clock until dark all day hard.
Mm-hmm.
And like we've done it too, where we night bugle, road bugle, cover miles. Like if we're not on a trail vehicle, however it is, like cover as mm-hmm. much ground and sleep as little as possible and get up and do it. But for us, that midday, a lot of times people like hear bull bugle in the morning, like, oh, he took his cows and pushed them away. Well, no. They're headed to bed. Lead cows knowing where they're going. He's going to scream, but just follow wherever they're going. So a lot of people do that. They quit. They're like, oh, yep, they climb the mountain, and I'm going to go back to camp, and I'll hunt them in the evening when they try to drop back down to this meadow.
And that's more of a late season thing, you're saying.
Or even early early for sure. So for us, like from 11 o'clock to 1 or 2 o'clock is supreme. The cows are bedded. He's content with what's going on. That's when he'll get out and explore. It's hard to pull a bull off of cows early in the morning. He's in with the herd. And you never know what happened last night. He could have had two other bulls that came in and he got his butt kicked and he's already like tucked tail and pushed the cows out of there. Where that midday madness, you slip in there, you get him to answer to a cow call, he bugles, you cut him off with a bugle, and it's like, whoa, okay, maybe. And then next thing you know, I mean, this happened in Idaho last year. We had a bull screaming his face off right at daylight. They moved up around the basin. We lost track of them. Actually ended up glassing them, luckily, and pinpointed them. Hiked all the way around the mountain, dropped in on them, and literally within 5 minutes, he was inside 25 yards. And he traveled like 150 yards from his bedded cows. It was like, he was like, wait a second, bull's in my territory. What's going on? He's like, that's totally content with what's going on there. And, you know.
But the main thing that he said was, is he wasn't hunting moving elk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He knew, you can get on Onyx and literally break down and go, oh, they're going there.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a bench.
Yep.
And there's nothing around here that's flat. Plenty they're going to go bed there.
Plenty of times.
Let them go.
Yeah, 10 o'clock, it's like, hey, let's take a break for an hour. Let them go, settle down, let them bed down, and then we'll...
And sneak into the bed.
Yeah. But then we take a nap. We take a nap, eat some lunch, get the wind right, and we get in there in his face, aggressive, and then that's when you can call him away from cows.
And two, a lot of times that time change between 8 and 10 a.m., somewhere in there, that wind is going to change, you know, that morning to afternoon where you can, you know, try to get that midday, get as much as possible, get a steady wind.
It's not that much different. This isn't going to be that much different. I feel like I already am just
that
like
are different are not what you think are different.
The things that's different is that you're staying out there and that it's a huge animal. I think really is the biggest.
Sorry.
If you could morph, well, that's what I was going to say. If you can morph deer and turkey, it's not that much different.
It's just a bigger scale, right?
It's just a bigger scale. It really isn't because, I mean, you could use the same thing with like a tom. And hens, or you could use a buck with a bedded with a doe. I mean, you can do this. I mean, you can do the same thing. Like you could have a buck bed down with a doe, and then go in, creep inside of his bubble, crawl into, you know, 70 yards of him, grunt, thrash a tree, and he's gonna stand up, and he's probably gonna come over and see what you are, and he's probably gonna walk within bow range. It's the same thing. Turkey with tom with a hen, group of hens. You know, you crawl into his bubble, and you don't make a noise. And then if you were to, like, Jake yelp, for example, and he's like, wait, who's over there? Or that's why people can reap turkeys, you know? Like, they crawl with the decoy. Like, that's why you can do that, is, like, you're getting in their bubble. It seems like the same thing with an elk. It's like, you know, you're hunting, like, a deer-type creature that can smell, that does a turkey vocalization, and has a harem like a turkey. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. It's like not it, when you guys are talking about it, there's so many similarities to me that
it is.
Like when you're talking about looking at a map, it's just like when we see a buck go somewhere, it's like, well, he probably went right there. That makes the most sense with this wind and with this terrain feature. He probably went right there because he's got his bases covered. You know, he's bedded here looking that way, wind this way, and then you can go there and he's probably there, or you can be and get yourself back in the game. It's like, sounds like you guys do some very similar stuff.
For sure.
It's cool. Yeah. And even that middle of the day thing when, like, everybody quits. The same
Get
thing.
Get away from hunting pressure.
Yeah.
Do the same
thing. I mean, 70% of people are heading back to camp or eating lunch or whatever. They're not thinking hunting at noon.
Yeah.
Well, I'm most.
Yeah, for sure.
It's, you know, so then it's like you have the woods to yourself.
Cool.
Which is great because the name of the game is getting, especially when we're sitting here with 80 cars parked all up and down these campgrounds, like we're trying to get away from people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't really set the picture of exactly what it's like here. Cody.
You said 80 cars. It is Labor Day weekend. You've got most of Colorado out recreating and enjoying Colorado. And so far, I wouldn't say that the hunting pressure is very high here.
No.
But
We were surprised
everywhere.
Too.
And
once we got here, we were like, man, they're really. I kept telling them, like, man, we're seeing a lot of people, like cars and stuff driving around, but like, there's not hunters out here.
Not many. We did see three on the way in, and they weren't even wearing packs. So
yeah.
I feel. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing, you can kill elk a thousand different ways, and you can make it really hard. You can make it really easy. I enjoy the
embracing the suck.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's I do too.
You could and probably go hunt a different unit. We could be right now driving the truck, stop, hiking all these points, bugling, trying to locate one tonight, sleep right there, hunt them in the morning. You may have more people on you, like four-wheelers or anything else. I love the experience of waking up in the morning, loading your pack. You don't know where you're going to end up that night. You don't know how the things are going to happen. You just go to the day's end. You don't know. Like last year when we took Hush, they're like, oh, where are we going to camp tonight? I'm like, I don't know, wherever it's dark and it's halfway flat, like out of the wind.
Cool.
It's like, yeah, just, you know, so embracing. And there's something about being, there's something about being at 10,000 feet in the mountains, like under the stars. That's the solitude of it, the companionship, the brotherhood. Like,
no phone service.
Yeah, no phone service. Like, I haven't, no, I'll Instagram. Be honest, like, I have not shared a lot of hunting camps with a lot of people. Like, our knit or our circle's been pretty tight. Over the last couple of years, we started sharing it with more people. And it's just fun to take experience, learn about people. And there's nothing, like, I had one, was a best friend. I took him elk hunting, and we're no longer friends. Like, you, because he just, like, cracked under pressure, you know? Right. So it's like, you learn a lot about people, learn a lot about yourself in the mountains. I just, your guys' attitude and, like, the willingness to put in whatever it takes and learn, I'm super stoked on.
Yeah, I'm super stoked to learn from you guys, because I feel like I could go with a lot of different people and I wouldn't have the experience that I'm going to have, as far as, like, I feel like the styles mesh too well.
100%.
Like, I feel like it's just, like, I'm like, how am I going to sleep now, guys? Seriously, we shouldn't have done this right now. We should have waited until, like, the morning and something. Like, yeah, now I'm just, like, I'm so
pumped. It's 11 o'clock.
I'm so jacked up right now. It's crazy.
So, wrap it up for the night, get some rest, load the packs in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be after it. And then what, we decide we're going to do kind of like a, potentially if we have time, like a middle of the hunt type podcast too. Or at the very least, like a end of it, like, I think we have to do like a breakdown.
We need three podcasts.
It'd be awesome to get that, like, your guys' excitement from tonight, middle of the road journey after you kill one, and then
we just pack it out, and then we'll get the next time we go back in.
Yeah,
for sure. So
I'm just so excited, and I'm real, real thankful for the opportunity, because I feel like there's gonna be a lot of things learned, and I'm just super stoked.
Yeah, special times in the mountains in September. So,
well, and to return the favor, at some point, you guys got to do some whitetail. Dude, November whitetail, like.
Sign me up.
We'll take you up on it.
Cool. It is a weird thing, I will say, like, watching each other, you feel like you know each other, but at the same time, like, what I think is so cool about, like, our platforms that, like, is both platforms, or both you know, channels, I guess, is it's what you see is what you get.
There's no
absolutely,
there's no surprises, there's no, like, ooh, that's not what I thought, like. And I knew that before I met you guys, and I think that's super cool.
That's why we iced you to start off.
Awesome. So good.
So I think with that, good night, guys, and look forward to sharing more.
Yep. Catch you on the next one.